Welcome to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada, indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Sir Richard Branson. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, the kind of thoughtful leaders that McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with the McGill MBA grad, Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's football or soccer club, for those who are confused by the words. Gabriel, thank you for joining us today. Around the world, it's called football, but in the US and Canada, it's called soccer. Did that strike you as strange when you first moved here?
Yeah, to be honest, it did. I actually grew up in Peru, where we call it football.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's a good translation either. But yeah, when I came here, it was soccer. But to me, it was a round ball. You have to score goals. So it was the same thing.
Tell us about your early years. Where are you from? As you mentioned, Peru. And what did your family do back in the day?
Sure. So I was born in Montreal. My dad is French-Canadian, but my mom's Peruvian. And my dad was a bush pilot. So we traveled a little bit in Central America, in Guatemala, and where my dad was working for Wings of Hope. And in the early 80s, my dad was working for Jacques Cousteau in Peru when they were doing the expedition of the Amazon. And I was in Lima during that time. So 5 years from 80 to 85, I was, you know, from 5 to 10 years old, I was living in Lima with obviously my mom. My dad was out in the bush a lot. But, you know, my whole family on my mom's side was in Lima. And it's there where, you know, I started to learn about football, about soccer, and really got the passion for it.
Wings of Hope, that rings a bell. What do they do?
It was a group, an association that gave aircrafts, small Cessnas, and they deployed them around the world, notably in Central America, to help the most needy, whether it's transportation, if you can imagine. An hour flight with a Cessna in the bush is equivalent to days by road, so it can save lives. And it was also to transport medications, vaccines, etc., from little towns in the bush. So my dad worked for them for a while, and then he got recruited by Jacques Cousteau to do the expedition in the Amazon.
Did you ever meet Jacques Cousteau?
I did, and his son, Jean-Michel, back in the day in Peru. We dined at a very fancy hotel that normally we would never have gone, but yes, had the chance to meet him, and my dad was his personal pilot.
Wow. How did you end up back in Montreal?
So once the expedition of the Amazon ended in around, I would say, 85, so that contract was done, per se. So my dad got recruited by Avion Sans Frontières. It's an arm of what they will call Terre Sans Frontières. And there's also Médecins Sans Frontières. So they have a bunch of associations. So my dad started working expeditions in the old Zaire that became Congo. But he was flying their same kind of missions, like helping the needy, transporting food and medications and vaccines. So that was his passion, to be in the bush.
Hello again. You're listening to the CO Series. And today I'm speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional soccer or football team. How old were you when you moved to Montreal?
Yeah, I was 10 years old. So then my family came back in 85.
Okay.
And yeah.
So Spanish is your mother tongue, but you grew up in French to a considerable degree as well with your father and with being here in Montreal. Where did you learn English along the way?
It was really at school in Peru. I mean, they taught pretty well English. It is a universal language, and it was back in the day as well. So I was very fortunate to learn it while I was going to school in Peru. But I had captured a bit of it when I was very young, growing up in Montreal, in Brossard. So it just caught on. And then I did a lot of my studies in CGEP and all of my university in English. So I was very fortunate to be trilingual.
What did you study at university?
So I studied mechanical engineering. I started at McGill. I did a couple of years, and then I transferred to Syracuse University in New York on a full scholarship for soccer, where I finished my mechanical engineering degree, and I did a master's in engineering management. And after that, once my soccer career was done, I finished my MBA at Deshotel, McGill.
It strikes me as probably unusual for someone from a very good Syracuse has a great soccer program, but to go from there into the professional, how unusual was that?
I mean, not that it was unusual. I mean, Syracuse was a very good overall athletic university, I would say. Top teams in football, basketball, lacrosse, I would say, were the three top sports, and then likely soccer. And no, we had a couple of players go pro. For example, Patrice Bernier, I played with him in Syracuse. And you see some good examples. For example, our Kamal Miller on our team, he came from Syracuse, studied there. He's on the national team now. So the reputation at Syracuse is pretty good, I would say, to groom professional players.
So who did you play for?
So
as a soccer player or a football player?
I played for McGill while I was in university. Then I played in Syracuse, and then I got drafted to Rochester for a couple of years, and then I got traded to the Montreal Impact in 2002, where I played from 2002 to 2008, and I also played for the Canadian national team.
How do you know? Like, players can only play so long. Like, and in hockey, if you're in your 40s, you're an old man at that point. And I guess football's not dissimilar. How do you know as a player when to retire?
Well, in my case, I had a bad injury. I got a blood clot after a hit. So I was 33. And I never had the ambition, to be honest with you, to play till I was 40 necessarily. I was hoping to get another run at going to a World Cup in 2010. I was still in the national program, but I got a pretty bad injury that, you know, made me reflect. And at the time, I was also finishing my MBA, and I was passionate about my studies. So to me, it was really, maybe I would have played a couple more years, or maybe I would have played a little bit more to see if I can help the club get into the MLS. But really, it was that injury that really shook me. So I decided, to take it seriously and to stop at that point. I didn't want to take medication for the rest of my life, because if you have blood clots repeatedly, then they can have, you know, dangerous consequences. So I decided to stop at the time. To me, I had already a great career that I could start right after my MBA. And health-wise, I figured it was a good time to stop. But really, if you talk to a lot of players, really the body speaks. Like when people ask me, what do you miss most? Of course, I miss playing in the action and all that, but the body really hurts when you're in your 30s. So what I missed the most was the locker room, to be honest with you. But every player has their own path. But I would say typically is the body that knocks at the door and says, you know, it's enough.
If you're tuning in just now, you're listening to the CO Series, and we're speaking with the CEO of CF Montreal, Gabriel Gervais. CF Montreal is Montreal's soccer or professional football team, if that's the term you use. But you had a bachelor's, a master's, and getting your MBA, so you had certainly potential for an excellent career ahead of you. That's not true of all players, but if you've just played and not gone to university, it's a big emotional decision. Where do you go from here? But in your case, it was, well, I have a career, I have a job waiting for me. It wasn't that bad a thing.
No, it was a good transition, but yeah. Like every player is going to live a grief when they stop playing, no matter what sport. So I was getting myself ready for that, and it did hit me though. I missed it so much the first couple of years. But no, but you're right. I was already preparing my path for after soccer. And, you know, you get used to a certain lifestyle, right? And if you have to take a big drop in the lifestyle, especially for soccer players back in the day that were not making millions, let's say, like the hockey players, but it's not all about money, right? It's about being stimulated, about doing things that you're passionate about. So that's why I was preparing already myself for that exit, the afterlife of soccer. So it was pretty smooth, and I went into consulting at Deloitte, high pace, very competitive, you know, I would say team-oriented industry.
Do you keep in touch with some of the guys you played soccer with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We had actually over the weekend a big alumni reunion because Mauro Biello went on the Wall of Fame for our club. So we had a lot of alumni come back, and we can get into more details on this, but one of the things that I want to do, I want to continue doing is to bring back our history and our history of our team of the impact is through the players and the coaches and the team managers that were there back in the day. So yeah, we're rebuilding, I would say, our alumni community.
What was the most memorable game you played in? Was there one or two that you go, I can't believe I'm playing at this and we're winning and the crowd is roaring? What was the most memorable game?
I would say that it's when we won the championship in Montreal in 2004. And I remember it was September 18th because it's the day of my birthday. So it's engraved in my memory forever. And we won the championship against Seattle at home at Claude Robillard. And whole family's there, my friends, and really my teammates. A lot of my teammates were players with whom I played with since I was 14 years old. Patrick Leduc, Nedved Pizzolitto, just to name a couple. So these were players that I grew up with. And it was fantastic to be able to be at the top of our league together. So I would say that was the most memorable game that I remember.
Sounds like it. Today I'm delighted to be speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional soccer or football club. When we come back, we'll talk about why the Net Impact have become CF Montreal. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. Hello again. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. We're speaking today with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional football or soccer club. Why Deloitte? You're a great football player, but your career moves on. Why did you choose Deloitte?
It was just a great fit. So I was going through the interview process in 2009. I remember 2009 was not the best year to come out of the NBA necessarily with the financial crisis. But to me, Deloitte, it was a great combination of, I like the DNA of the firm. I like the values. I like the people first. I would say priorities that they had portrayed to me. And to me, it made sense to go into consulting because with my engineering background, I had worked at Saputo as a project manager in the engineering department. So I went at Deloitte in consulting and supply chain and operations, which was very fluid the way I started that career. But it was really about the people. The people I met were very stimulating. I met a couple of partners, and I knew I wanted to work with them and to be like them at some point. So that's why I went to Deloitte.
Do you still use your engineering mindset? Like, engineering degrees teach you to view the world a certain way. Did you use that at Deloitte and now at the football club?
Yeah, at Deloitte, absolutely. I would say in our team, the supply chain team, you know, at the peak, we're maybe 200 professionals across Canada. And I would say 80% were engineers, either mechanical, electrical, industrial, so chemical, etc. So we would solve problems with an engineering mindset. Everything I do is like that. I'm very Cartesian. I attack problems in a structured manner. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely helping me now to see things in different ways. I would say that my engineering mind that I had got amplified thanks to my MBA at McGill. It opened my eyes to other departments, to how, you know, different services interacted. It made me understand a little bit better how an entire company, an entire industry, and how, especially at McGill, focusing on global, how the world actually works. With an emphasis, I remember my organizational behavior classes that, you know, once you're there, you're like, well, why am I taking this? But I would say those are the classes that really had the most impact on me. So yeah, it's always with that engineering mindset, but I'm really putting to practice everything that I learned throughout my life, whether on the field, off the field, or in school.
What makes a great consultant? And when should you use a consultant? I mean, you could bring consultants in here, and you do occasionally.
Yeah.
What's a great consultant, and when should we use a consultant?
I think a great consultant is someone who listens to begin with, is somebody that shows empathy and that can walk in the other person's shoes. It's easy for a consultant to come in and try to make all these different modifications, all these great recommendations, but if you don't really understand what your client or the company you're working with is going through and walking in the person's shoes, I don't think you can you can really help. And also, I remember at Deloitte, we always said, we need to earn the right to serve our client, meaning it's not just a transaction, it's a partnership you want to build. And that's what I'm looking personally now at CF Montreal. If we are going to use consultants, which we do, they have to see eye to eye with how we see things in terms of values, our mission, our vision. If we see together, then it's just not going to be a transaction. It's going to be a partnership that we're both going to grow together. And a good example I can say, because I'm really proud of the work we've done with the firm Pigeon from a marketing perspective. Working with them, I feel that they're part of our group. They're an extension of our group, and they're really excited with the work they're doing. They were behind pretty much all the logos, except for the, I would say, the 21 where they were not included. And you feel they have the DNA of our club, which is important.
Hello again, you're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional soccer or football team. Gabriel, why was the name changed from the Net Impact to CF Montreal?
Yeah, so it went from Impact de Montréal, it went to Club de Foot de Montréal, and now it's CF Montreal. So there was a vision to use a nomenclature that's more international. For example, FC Barcelona. Okay, Barcelona, they don't speak English, but it's called football club. But it's just a nomenclature that's used worldwide, or in South America, it could be Club de Football or Sporting Club. There's different acronyms. That was the intent. And right now we're CF Montreal. So you mentioned it before. It's Montreal's professional club. That's where we want to put the city at the center. I think the vision, the way it was thought about was correct. I think it's just in the way that it was communicated. Even with me, I'm an ex-Impact player, and the way it was communicated, I think that was where the shortfall was, where we heard a lot of rumblings from our fans. But right now, the way we want to reconnect with our history, the new logo that I recognize myself in the new logo, nothing against the one we're using right now where it's a snowflake. I just don't recognize the team in that logo. There's no blue fleur de lis, which are important. Now we're bringing that back. So I think it's not that the vision to change the name, for example, was wrong.
It strikes me as that a lot of immigrants come from Latin America and Europe. They're naturally football fans. Like yourself, you move from Latin America. Yeah. This is the sport that's huge. So the immigration patterns of Quebec probably help the club.
I would say yes and no. Some of the people that have come from Europe or South America, we call them, and nothing to insult anybody, but it's the soccer snobs, that they rather watch English Premiership, Portugal, Italy, etc., or the South American game. But that's our job, is to connect with them. So they see players from their community, because we're very multicultural in our team. We have South Americans, we have Africans, we have North Americans, we have it all, okay? Europeans. So how do we do a better job to connect our players to our community? That's something that our new vice president in marketing communications just started last week. That's going to be a big part of her job, to see how we can put our brand forward and really have people connect to it. So we were a full house last weekend. You're going to say, well, it was against Toronto. Yes, but there's a big rivalry. It's a derby, so people are interested in that. But how do we get that kind of feeling every game? And that's our job, because we're selling, give or take, 17 to 20 events on a yearly basis. That's our season. It seems simple, but Montreal is driven by events. I could say that Saturday was an event because we're playing TFC, but the other games, it's tough to make an event out of playing, for example, in Austin, where people cannot name perhaps even two players from the other team, but they want to come here because they're gonna watch our team, excel on the field.
Hello again, you're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional soccer or football team. You have an owner. Did you know Joey when you worked at Saputo?
Yes, I did.
So you've actually known him a long time then?
20 years or so.
So there's the CEO, you, the owner, the CEO, the manager, the coach, the captain. So you have a bunch of different roles. Just take us through briefly, what is the role in theory of each of those people? What do they do?
Sure. So we have, let's start with the top. Well, Joey Saputo, he's the owner and he's the president of the board. So we have a board that I that we sit in. And in that board, we have now our senior VPs who are there. So we have a CHRO, everything human resources. We have our new CMO who just joined. We have our CFO, and then we have our VP or our chief sporting officer who takes care of everything that's technical, the sporting side of things, including the academies. So my role is really to be, like we say, the chef d'orchestre for that whole team of VPs. And we report up to the board and to the owner. So the owner is there. I mean, Joey Saputo equals soccer in Quebec. I mean, it's thanks to him and his family that we even have, a beautiful stadium, beautiful academy.
Saputo Stadium, no less. Yeah.
Exactly. And that there's professional soccer in Quebec is thank you to him and his family, because when Mr. Saputo, started the adventure in 93 with the Impact, it was to offer the city the highest level of professional soccer possible. That's how it all started in 93, and today we're in the top league in North America. So my job, as I said, is to be a chef d'orchestre for the other VPs and for the teams who are under. So we have a team of, for example, on the marketing side, everything and communications as well. So everything that's marketing, communications, social media, everything that you see around the stadium in terms of, whether it's partnerships and things like that.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional football or soccer team, if that's the term you use. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. Next up, we'll ask Gabriel more about the team and the strategy of playing on the field. Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. We're speaking today with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's football or soccer team, if you would. Is there a general manager sort of thing?
It's Olivier Renard, who's
Okay.
our chief sporting officer. So he's the equivalent of the general manager, I would
Okay.
say. And under him, he's got a structure of medical staff, of coaches. Then he has his whole structure of the academy. There's the first team, yes, but you have the U19s, the U15s, 17s, etc., that build, the bulk of the technical side of things.
When they're playing a game, he doesn't call up and ask your advice, does he? Or is that something where
No,
he would,
no, not not on. I would say, if we have perhaps a player that we want to go get, or we have our technical meeting once a week where we talk about salary cap, where we talk about contracts. So we do this as a team, and then we're going to present a recommendation to the owners. If we need extra money, let's say for a player, or if we want to sell a player, or if we want to sign a player to an extension, etc., or put the option up front. Those are the kinds of discussions we have. It's not my job, or even I would say, as a matter of fact, our chief sporting officer to tell the coach who to put on the field. We all have our role to play. Okay, the coach decides who to put on the field. He's accountable for that, and he's accountable for the results. The locker room, it belongs to the coaching staff and to the players.
So, do you ever go down?
Yes, I do, but I ask for the permission of the coach if I can go in the locker room.
And would you talk to the players, or is it more just to celebrate after a win, or?
Yeah, I don't get involved in like their pregame. They have their own,
Okay.
their own thing. I don't get involved into that. I ask for permission perhaps after the game to shake their hand, and whether it's a win or a loss doesn't matter. Obviously, when I'm with the road with the team, then I get closer, and sometimes the players, they come and talk to me, and I just have this courteous conversation, but I'm not going to get involved in anything that's call it criticize the play or suggestions around that. That's not my job.
We see in Hollywood movies, the coach says something inspiring at the half and they go out and win the game. What do you have that in football as well, where the coach would, or the captain or someone in your career, did you have something like that? Or did you ever do that yourself?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've heard a lot of inspiring speeches, whether by coaches, whether by our captain or by by the player that you never thought would say something and says something. That it can be extremely powerful. And I know it happens. It happens in our team. When the captain needs to stand up, he does. When the coach, but you know, it's all in the actions afterwards that you do. But yeah, absolutely. It's very much so alive in soccer.
Hello again. You're listening to the CO Series. And today I'm speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional soccer or football team. What is strategy in football other than let's win the game? Like, you want to win every, like, you know, at one level you go, that's yeah. just, okay, I teach strategy. So I'm trying to wondering, what is strategy in football?
Well, if I can just take a step back, I mean, people think you just get up on a Saturday morning and just put your cleats on and then you go play. It's not like that. You prepare the whole week for that game, you know, the peak that'll happen on Saturday. So every day counts in your preparation. And in terms of strategy, it depends who you play against. But one thing that I like a lot about our team is that whoever we play against, it doesn't matter. We play the same way. So in terms of strategy, you could say, I can play with three defenders, or I can play with four defenders. I can play with three forwards or two forwards. It depends on the situation, but we're pretty much the same. We want to keep the ball. So in terms of strategy, how we play is that we maintain possession of the ball. We have very good technical players that keep the ball, even though defenders are very good technically. We keep the ball. We like to break lines and then attacking numbers. With our other teams, let me just give you an example. The New York Red Bulls, they play an energetic game. Okay, that's their DNA, Red Bull, and they play the same way. It's more direct, a lot of energy, whereas us, we like to play more somewhat lower tempo, keep the ball, and then we go at speed. So that's a strategy, and it's more than a strategy. I would say it's a club DNA. And the best club DNA you can think about is, for example, FC Barcelona, one of the top clubs. They play very technical soccer. And everybody in their academies, whether you're 12 years old all the way to the senior team, they play the same way. And that's something that we want to put in place across our academy with the youth players and obviously with the first team players, is to play beautiful soccer. That's what we want.
And that would encourage who you should get as a player. Do they fit yes. with the philosophy? If they don't, well, we're not going to bring them in.
That's well said, yes.
How do we get big names to come to Montreal? Is that possible? Like, I was out at a Real Madrid game with an alumni works there. Wonderful. But how do we get some of the big names? Or is that tough to bring them to Montreal and to Canada?
Well, I would ask the question, do we need big games? Big names, sorry. But yeah, no, Montreal is known multicultural, diverse. So I would say people and players are attracted to the city. We've had Didi Drogba, you know, Nacho Piatti, Marco Di Vaio, Alessandro Nesta. I can keep going. Thierry Henry came here. So there's a magnet that our city just naturally is. Now, players will come, obviously, as well for the money, right? So we saw Insigne now go to Toronto for a lot of money. Now, is it worth, do we get bang for the buck for it? Not sure. So we want to do it. It's our way. I'm not saying that Toronto, they're not doing the right way, or now with LAFC, who have bought, you know, a lot of top players. That's their choice. For us, we want to grow local talent. We want to grow young players and sell them at the right time. So that's our model that we're putting in place right now. We have among, if not the youngest team on the field, probably an average of 23 or 24 years old. That's how we want to play. We want to play energetic. Yes, we're going to be a bit naive. That's fine. But that's how we want to build our club right now, with the academy, young players, and then we sell them. Rather than being a buying team, we want to be a selling team.
Hello again. You're listening to the CO Series. And today I'm speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's professional soccer or football team. So fourth in the Eastern Conference, so not bad actually. Pretty fine record.
Yes.
Is there a cap in hockey? There's a cap. Is there such a thing as cap in soccer?
There is a cap in our league that we need to respect, but there is this rule around designated players, where a designated player that you can pay 15 or 20 million, like the example per year, like the example of Insigne, who's only going to count for roughly 600,000 on the cap, and the rest is out of the owner's pocket. So there's, this is since David Beckham. That was a David Beckham rule where you can have a designated player. Now it's up to three. So you have that option to bring a superstar who only counts for a small percentage of your cap, but the rest is paid out of pocket. So you're allowed to do that. It's not a bad avenue either. We have a designated player. His name is Victor Wanyama, who played Premiership. He played Champions League, top player. But we're not paying $20 million either. It's more. It's a lesser amount that we have for designated players, which is fine because it works well for us. And he's a player you mentioned before who fits extremely well in what we're trying to do. He's a veteran player. He's teaching young players how to be a good professional. So that's our mindset.
Data analytics and AI. Our son just finishing a master's in data analytics at McGill, so we're very much aware of it. What are you doing with data analytics here?
Not enough, to be honest with you. We need to do more. And even the MLS as a league is helping the teams get into, whether it's dynamic pricing, for example, and things like that. We're not doing enough of that. We've just implemented Salesforce as a CRM, which is going to help tremendously. But no, I that's one of the things that I'll need to do. Is really to stand up an analytics team across, you know, finance, ticketing, can be food and beverage, merchandising. How do we get our stadium full? How are we actually reaching our fans from a marketing perspective? There's a lot we can do, but in full transparency, right now we're not doing much.
So there's a neat opportunity to do more there. But it's interesting because it's not just the players, but it's beverages, it's all sorts of things.
It's
the whole business.
Like the players, we are capturing data with GPS around, distance travel, sprints, top speeds, and things like that. So let's say a player who's coming back from a hamstring injury, we don't want him to take too much load. So we have some ratios that we build, even during training, that we track to make sure that the load is not too high to get that player back at the optimal pace. So we are using data that we capture from the players, but I wouldn't say that's AI. That would be more analytics.
We are speaking with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's football team. Up next, we'll talk about whether he's an introvert or extrovert. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series. We're speaking today with Gabriel Gervais, CEO of CF Montreal, Montreal's football or soccer team, if you would. It's interesting, you have an unusual organization. At McGill, our current dean is a woman, the dean before is a woman, our principal's a woman, the principal. So at one point we had more women deans, I think, than men. So that's more of what the world's moved towards. But here, it's interesting because it's a men's team. But you were saying actually there's some senior women leaders here now.
Yeah.
So that must change the atmosphere a bit as opposed to back in your day it was all men, or were there some women around as well?
There were some women in our administrative team, I would say. But now we have a couple of vice presidents I'm very proud of. So show more diversity, and that's how it needs to be. But we can do better there too. Even on the technical side of things, to have more women, whether on the medical staff, also on the academy side of things. And we see this movement very much so, for example, in hockey very recently, where we have a lot of women in very important positions. That's something that we're very open to. It's even mandated by the board. We need to do a better job, not only from a gender perspective, but the whole bit around diversity and inclusion, which is extremely important.
What's your vision of the team for the next 5 years?
Really, this year, just before I answer that question, this year is a good year for us to take a step back. Okay. Why a step back? Coming out of COVID, the pandemic, coming out of the rebrand. Now we want to reconnect with our history, with our fans. And really, one of the things that I wanted personally to do day one was to, I would say, make it very clear what our mission, purpose, what our vision and values, what they are. It was very, very important because any step you take forward, whether it's with a player, whether it's with a partner, whether with somebody who's going to join our organization, they need to abide to that vision, those values. That was critically important. And it's not that they were not there, but I would say since the team went into the MLS, if we don't hear that, really our DNA is to develop soccer in Quebec, is to give back to the community, to represent Montreal. So that's what I want to do. So if you ask me 5 years from now, I would love to be in a renovated stadium, okay? I would love for us to continue growing the academy, to have women in the academy as well, not only male athletes who are there now, to have a more diverse across the board in the organization, to bring, I would say, joy to our fans, to have the stadium full every time like it was last Saturday against Toronto. That's where I hope, and to have fun, for the team to be here 4 or 5 years from now, for everybody to have fun and everybody to be passionate about our team when we lose.
So your own kids, are they playing? You learned a lot from sports.
Yep.
Are you kind of encouraging them along that same path, or is it something that's obviously up to them? But is that something you're kind of encouraging them to have sports as part of their lives, just as young people?
Yeah, and you know, my wife does a lot of sports. She's better than me at, I would say, multi-sports.
Okay.
She got exposed to a lot of sports when she was young. So that's something that it's one of the values, to the well-being, to practice sports, to eat well. That's in our DNA of our family, I would say. Now, you know, we all have our own personalities. So I would say one of my oldest son, I would say he's more Cartesian. He's more on the artistic side of things. He likes more the individual sports,
yeah,
which is fine. Whereas my youngest, he's more into soccer and more, I would say, the group sports. But to me, it's just, if they can find certain discipline and well-being through sports, then good. They don't need to be professional athletes by no means. It's their choice. But if any one of them wishes to pursue any sport at a high level, we're obviously going to encourage them.
If you're tuning in just now, you're listening to the CO Series, and we're speaking with the CEO of CF Montreal, Gabriel Gervais. CF Montreal is Montreal's soccer or professional football team, if that's the term you use. Gabriel, you're more of an introvert or extrovert?
I would say a bit of both. Depends of the context, but I would say more of an extrovert. I mean, I'm outgoing. I like to speak. So I would say more extrovert.
As a senior leader, do you sometimes have to act more like an introvert and be quiet and listen more to be an effective CEO?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to step on the toes of anybody. So yeah, I like to take a step back and let others lead. When I need to step in, I will. I'm not afraid to do so. But no, you're absolutely right. At some point, you do need to take a step back and let the team go.
When you were playing on this field years ago, were you the noisy, talkative player out there on the field?
Yeah, I was. I played center back, so I could see the whole game. And, you know, my coaches taught me that I needed to be vocal in the back, similar to a goalie needs to be. So, no, I liked to direct traffic. That was part of my DNA when I played. And it got me going in a game, too, when I was vocal. So I would say, yes, absolutely.
How do you keep in shape today? What's kind of the exercise program that you aspire to if you don't always achieve?
Well, I like to run about, I don't know, 30, 40 kilometers a week. So the jog, that's I would say my main sport. It just, I can really, you know, really disconnect from everything. And some brilliant ideas often come when I'm just running and, you know, listening to my music. So say I jog, I do some biking with the family. And winter, I would say it's skiing or hiking in the mountains. Skiing is our family sport. So yeah, those would be the main sports. But I would say what really keeps me fit is really jogging and running around with the kids.
You live in Old Montreal?
Yes.
So what do you like about living in Old Montreal?
Oh, everything about Old Montreal. I mean, it's great. The water, the history. Just, I like the bike paths and where I can just go out and run. So I've always liked that central part of the city. It's so easy to go anywhere. So yeah, it's been there for a lot of years now in that area. So it's where we call it home.
And it's more family friendly than 20 years ago.
It is. And you know, a lot of families decided, like, we live in a condo. And then we have a cottage up north. So we like to mix things like that. And, you know, we find a lot of joy that way. It's not for everyone, but, you know, and we found that other families are there as well, or in the area. So to each his own. But yeah, we just love the area, and when people visit, I mean, it's a great place to be.
This might be an unfair question, but what is a quote you live by? Or is there a thing that you
Yeah.
say to your people all the time and they go, that Gabriel's going to say this because it's just the right thing to say?
I don't necessarily say it, but I've always lived through it's not the venom that kills, it's the doses. So it's I've always lived that way, that you can do things, but do things with moderation in everything that you do. You can be very, very passionate about something, and maybe you're too passionate about it, and it becomes a little bit negative. So yeah, I've lived with that, just to have a balanced life, a good equilibrium in my life, and I guess it's paid off so far.
Your English is, if you said you're an Anglophone, I'd believe you. And you're French, you grew up in Quebec, but you grew up in Latin America and your mother is Peruvian. Are you a bit different in the three languages?
Well, everybody tells me I have an accent in every single one of the three languages. I'll take that as a compliment. No, I really feel fortunate, and my parents did a great job. My mom would always speak to us in Spanish at home, so we kept it. And then I was fortunate to go, to CEGEP in English, same thing at university. Went to the States afterwards for parts of my study. And then during work, the three languages, when I was at Deloitte, I travel a lot to South America as well for work. It's I feel very fortunate, to be honest with you, and I hope future generations can be as lucky as I am.
We're off to Mexico this weekend as a family visiting some alumni, as it turns out, down there. How different are the accents and the cultures of the different Latin American countries? You've lived there, you've traveled there. Are they really similar, or are there considerable differences?
No, considerable differences. I mean, just the accent is very noticeable. Also the cultures. I mean, personally, I'm from Peru. It's different if you go to Argentina, where it would be more European. So every country has its own beauty, its own language, its own I'd say characteristics. But yeah, it differs quite a bit.
This is the CEO Series. Gabriel, thank you for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our show producer, Gabby Hartshorn-Mell, technical producer, Marco Campagna, and scriptwriter, Stephanie Richer. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.